If you were given the chance, would you ever take the plunge and turn up at the New South Wales Parliament chambers and put in a bill that you feel strongly about in front of politicians? Well, during the opening ceremony this week, at least 89 young parliamentarians did exactly that. It was the end result of their leadership training with the not-for-profit, the Y New South Wales, YMCA, an organisation that's been helping to strengthen young people's lives since the early 1900s. Ranging between the age of 15 to 18 years old, the young people proposed bills concerning them, from education, youth Indigenous representation, women's issues, housing and more. The Honourable Penny Sharp, MLC, Minister for Climate Change, Environment and Heritage, as well as the Honourable Damien Tudorhope, MLC, Leader of the Opposition in the Legislative Council, closely paid attention to what young people had to say. In between the debates, I caught up with 15-year-old Alisa, who led the Aboriginal Affairs Committee.
I'm Alisa Pinchrecht. I'm part of the Aboriginal Affairs Committee. I'm the Minister for Aboriginal Affairs. I'm the member for Hornsby. Please tune in to my interview on Razor's Edge. I personally am an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander woman. I'm from the Gamilaroi Nation up near Tamworth. And growing up in that family and that environment has led me to see not only issues on a community basis, but also a state basis and a national basis. So since about the age of six, I've always been interested in politics and specifically in the Aboriginal affairs sector. And I really want to improve the lives and the well-being of all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples across the country.
When you were growing up, when you were hearing stories about your heritage, how did that make you feel?
I was always very interested. I feel like it's a very unique side. Not many people I'm able to share this culture with. So I always found that meeting people that were similar to me or had the same stories or grew up in the same way made me more passionate and ignited a fire within me to really learn more about that heritage and culture.
Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are reported differently in the media. How does that make you feel when that happens and knowing that you had that connection early on?
I believe, just like everyone should, that we're all people, we're all equal, we all stem from the same people. We just share different cultures and that's what makes us unique, that's what makes us individual people. And it really makes me want to improve my advocacy so that we can show that Indigenous people are the same as everyone else and there's no differences that lie within who we are, it's simply the culture that we share and that we own.
Because you said you're from Tamworth, what parts of your culture that you found now is important to you?
Definitely language. I've been learning my language recently and I really want to make that a goal to share that with other people in my family so that we can almost restore some of the language that's been lost through colonisation and processes like that. Cultural dancing as well has always been a big part of me. My cousins up north in Taree are very passionate about their cultural dancing and that's never been something that's available to me. So as I've gotten older, I've really tried to incorporate my lives and include all that cultural and traditional knowledge that otherwise wouldn't have been available.
So now I'm going to ask you about some issues and what you think about them. Like for example, there's issues to do with the bridging the gap and then there's issues to do with the new laws they've introduced in Northern Territory, which is affecting really young Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. Do you have any opinions about them?
So I definitely feel I've worked closely with the Closing the Gap report for HSC major work projects. And I feel as though the outcomes that have been set are the right way to go, but there hasn't been enough done and enough taken to achieve those outcomes and to really ensure that Aboriginal people are in the process of closing the gap of the outcomes. You look at all the data, and while there has been data to say that these things are working, there is nowhere near the programs or support that are needed to ensure that these outcomes are met by the target dates.
So can you remember from your project at HSC some of these things that really concerned you and what you think should happen?
I think that the only target that has actually been proved to have a substantial impact has been native title on land and water. All the other outcomes aren't on track to be met. So I feel as though the native title and land are ones that work closest with the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, and the other targets are very much government based. So it has been proven that Indigenous people working with the government has achieved the best targets and the best outcomes. I feel like health and education are the two biggest ones that we need to worry about, because they're the ones that build up livelihood for everyone, not just Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, and these outcomes are slowly trailing further and further behind.
So when you actually did your HSC project, what were some of the details that you spent time on, and why did you do that?
So my major work project was on the voices of Indigenous Australians. I wrote a book detailing 20 biographies of Indigenous Australians, and to accompany that, I wrote a 7-page essay on the Closing the Gap reports and how these individual figures are contributing to the Closing the Gap reports with their programs and their advocacy. The biggest thing that people have is that they want to build up cultural knowledge, but also government and world knowledge from early age. So that's what everyone's been working on. It has proven to have an impact, but once again, it can't be done from a simple one individual. It has to be done from a community or from the government stance, and it works better if it's done from both.
So I've been reading a book called Indigenous Knowledge, and it's written by a group of academics led by Marsha Langton, and they all come from Melbourne University. And one chapter that really fascinated me was about governance. And apparently, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have already in place a practice of governance that could be really useful in applying in modern day times, so we can work with the community better. What do you think about that? Have you heard about it?
I haven't specifically heard about that book or that stance, but I do know that it's often mistaken that Aboriginal people never had any form of governance or any systems before colonisation, which is actually the complete opposite. We had systems similar to what we have in place now. They just weren't so punished and then forced upon leadership and titles. So I feel as though the way that they govern themselves is, it works just fine, and it has worked fine since before colonisation. And I feel like the bringing in of a westernised system has disrupted not only the cultural barriers, but also the well-being of personal people.
Do you have any messages at all out there for the rest of young people who are probably thinking that Parliament has nothing to do with them?
Well, I've always been interested in politics, and I really believe that if you're passionate about something, you need to take that on and build, not a career out of it, just build and fire up that passion. Because if you believe in something and if you know that's what you want to do, you can make anything happen. Just surround yourselves with family and friends that support you, and surround yourself with things that make you passionate and that build up your fire inside you.
Meanwhile, Race's Edge reporter Thomas Kutis managed to catch up with some of the young men who also had plenty to say.
I think it went very well. There's no complaints, all positive.
Do you feel like that young people's voices were heard in this meeting?
Yes, I'd say so. There was an opportunity with bills, with various bills presented from a diverse range of participants in the Youth Parliament, and so these will be debated over the coming week, so it's a great opportunity for young voices to be heard.
I think today's meeting went very well. It was a good opportunity for young people's voices to really be heard, and I think the Youth Parliament program in itself is very valuable for young voices to be like actually put on display in Parliament.
As a young person yourself, like, what issues concern you the most?
I would say I'm in the Environmental Sustainability Committee, so the environment and climate change is a very big concern for me, as well as housing and transit. So I think those are probably the top three picks that I would say concern me the most.
I think it went really well. It's really interesting to get to see all other people's perspectives and just the power of youth, that youth have to change.
And like, what issues concern you the most? Did you think that some of the issues that concerned you were raised in today's meeting?
Oh yeah, definitely. We talked about housing affordability, and I think that's a really big issue for a lot of people.
So hello, I'm Omar Laham, the Youth Minister for Education and TAFE, and our proposal is centred around alternative educational pathways. We feel that in New South Wales, there's a huge emphasis on one pathway, which is the traditional HSC courses that you go into. But there are other pathways which you can do in year 11 and 12, such as TAFE, TVET and RTOs, and we want to increase the funding, support and viability of these courses for people who still want to attend university. And we want to improve perceptions in society around these courses, while also addressing other stereotypes in the education industry, such as gender stereotypes for different subjects.
Can I ask you, Omar, why is it so important for you?
Often I see at school when I'm surrounded by everyone that the traditional pathway doesn't suit everyone and it doesn't get the best out of them educationally. So I'm very passionate about helping to improve the education system to make it world-class and fitting for everyone in the country.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity. My name's Sudeep Velagapudi. I'm the Youth Minister for Health in the 2025 Youth Parliament. So the Health and Medical Research Committee's proposal for this year, which is my committee, their proposal for this year is to improve access for young people into the medical profession. This bill will be centered around three main parts. We're including new financial incentives for equity and access for young people into the medical profession. We're increasing and improving educational training pipelines, especially for specializations, which is an area in which New South Wales healthcare lacks a lot. Along with this, we're also proposing new social incentives because we're having a strong focus on rural and regional areas where healthcare is more required. And so we're trying to bring in social incentives to incentivize young people to stay in these rural areas. We'll be doing this through a range of incentives, from proposing subsidizing UCAT and NSW to increasing scholarships and including regional and rural contracts similar to the Teach Rural Scholarship. So we have a range of different policies in place, and we're very excited to debate this in Parliament in this upcoming sitting week.
My name's Gus Robinson, and I'm not a minister like the other two you heard from before, but I'm a member of the Mental Health Committee. And so the bill we've been working on is primarily around redefining what we view mental health as being. And what that means in a like concrete concept is that we're trying to make sure that mental health is more community-led and is less top-down via government. So what we think is that mental health is sort of different to every single individual. But obviously, it's very difficult to get individual catering based on like state-sponsored mental health to every single individual. So what we hope to do is through a number of initiatives, mostly of which will be distribution of mental health support to local communities through mechanisms through the funding mechanisms. So ensuring that 40% of all funding goes directly to communities rather than the state mental health services like Headspace, which we acknowledge do really good work, but it's more at the sort of it's more centralized and more top down rather than being led by people, which we by empowering individuals, which we think is the best way to actually advance people's mental health. And then secondly, what we're going to do is we've identified that people in the youth justice system, people who actually are the ones in the most need of mental health support, we've identified them as people who are warrant being able to receive a youth mentoree. So someone who's like who they feel might inspire them, someone who they feel might be able to make or help their mental health. And so that person, will, when they're in prison, when they're in the detention system, they will be with them, they will support them, and they will try to get through those hard times with them. But also, crucially, when they leave the detention system, they'll still have that person, that mentor, to ensure that they aren't just left on the block without anyone to help them. So what our bill is about is, as much as government can do, trying to cater mental health towards the individual while also acknowledging that we still need Headspace and important programs like that that are more centralized and less individual focused.
So it's like more tailored to particular needs.
Yes.
And I've just interviewed the head of the Aboriginal Governance Committee, Alyssa. I'm really curious to know, how challenging is it, you think, for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander men who's constantly hearing about deaths in custody in prison, and how does that impact on their mental health, do you think?
I think it means that their mental health is obviously significantly degraded. It means that not only when they're not in prison, but when they get into prison, there's a reinforcement loop, right? So instead of expecting that you're going to get good outcomes in prison, instead of expecting that prison will be a place where it's harsh, it's difficult, but you might be able to recover from it, you might be able to see a light at the end of the tunnel, prison instead is just, to them, is viewed as like a extremely negative space, a space in which there's sort of no recovery from. So what we need to do is we need to, as we've said, empower individuals. So we need to make it so that people believe that there's something to keep on living for effectively.
You heard the voices of young people Alyssa and Omar and many of the 89 youth participants at the Y Youth Parliamentarians launching ceremony at the State Parliament of New South Wales Monday this week.